Do you remember that scene in Pirates of the Caribbean when Keith Richards makes a cameo appearance as Captain Teague? The International Brethren of Pirates are all standing around arguing about their pirate's code, and then Keith Richards ends the argument by shooting one of them and announcing, "The code is the law." Well, there's actually some historical truth there, because a lot of those swashbuckling 18th century pirates were actually early adopters of constitutions. I mean, this is back before constitutions existed in Western Europe, and pirates were writing their own and using them to govern their ships and trade. That's just one of the stories that Alexa Clay and Kira Maya Phillips tell in their new book, The Misfit Economy: Lessons in Creativity from Pirates, Hackers, Gangsters, and Other Informal Entrepreneurs. Steve Paulson sat down to talk with them.
Alexa, you argue that the free market economy does not possess a monopoly on innovation, but there seems to be a perception that it does. So what is wrong with this view of the way the market economy works?
Yeah, well, I think one thing that we really tried to look at in the misfit economy was bring attention to the fringe economies. So around the world, in some countries, over 70% of the economies are informal. And the informal economy accounts for over $10 trillion. So we really wanted to expand this idea of who are the innovators, who are the entrepreneurs, beyond just a trope of Mark Zuckerberg type folks from Silicon Valley or hoodie-wearing college dropouts who go out to start tech companies, and really look at broader ideas of entrepreneurs, thinking about ways in which drug dealers or street hawkers or gangsters have entrepreneurial potential. We looked at hackers and Somali pirates as well.
So when you talk about the misfit economy, some of it you might be referring to is illegal, but some might not be.
Yeah, exactly. We basically focus on two different types of misfits. We focus on misfits that are really working to transform economies that are underground. But then we also look at misfits within our formal system. So folks working within huge institutions or multinational companies that are really trying to transform those organizations from within. And these aren't just saboteurs or whistleblowers, but they're proactively hacking those cultures. They're developing new, say, environmental or social business models within those companies.
When you say that we all have something of an inner misfit within us, can you explain why you think that?
I had a much more esoteric background growing up. Both my parents were anthropologists. You know, my mother researched alien abduction. I was taught in Quaker schools and alternative schools. So my first exposure to corporations was after college. And suddenly I was in this almost corporate heart of darkness. And I really thought of myself as an anthropologist, really trying to understand what makes business tick. And it was just interesting to me how conformist of a culture it was and how people really had to conform to a job description and leave so much of who they were behind. They didn't come into work with the full actualization of all their personality. They really came in camouflaged, if you will. And so part of the people that I started finding really interesting were misfits that wouldn't do that camouflaging, that really brought all their values into work. Someone like Dave Burdish, for example, who was a third-generation auto worker at Ford, who was a devout Catholic and human rights activist and started bringing those conversations into Ford Motor Company, which was incredible. So that's how it really got started for me. Kira, do you want to share?
The goal of the book, personally, for me, is to get people to realize that if we listen to the aspects of ourselves that we feel really uncomfortable with, we can learn a lot. But also, if you take that externally, if you listen to the misfit who really shakes you to your core, who makes you feel the most uncomfortable, that we can also learn a lot. So it's sort of less about the specific lessons from a pirate or a hacker or a gangster, but more about realizing that perhaps it's the people who you least expect you to teach you anything who perhaps can end up teaching you the most.
So does this apply to your own life? I mean, were there certain parts of your life that you were not very comfortable with and you somehow figured out how to embrace that piece of you?
I think that generally I definitely had that lesson, absolutely, to stop silencing the parts of myself that I, didn't particularly like.
Can you give me examples of that?
I can share. Do you want to think?
Yeah, no, go ahead and I'll have it.
Some of the folks that really inspired me to just be much more out there were some of the performance artists and activists that we spoke to. So the Yes Men or La Barbe, which is a fantastic French feminist group that wear fake mustaches and dress up as men and go to events that are very male dominated and congratulate the man on being so amazing and masculine. And and they just have this really interventionist kind of thing. And in parallel to that was really inspired by Plain People and by Luddite communities around the world that we spoke to. And so I started doing this performance character as a result of some of the research where I would dress up as an Amish woman and go to tech conferences and just be kind of Socratic with tech founders, really pushing them to think a bit more about what their legacy is in the world and how they want to change the world and whether or not we really need that app that they're developing, and just having conversations about the role that these digital technologies are having on our relationships and our intimacy and things like that. And so I think the project and this research and meeting different types of misfits has just really emboldened me to do things that are a bit more interventionist in nature. And, you know, one of the principles that we talk a lot about in the book is around just the nature of provocation, that just igniting a conversation or intervening in an appropriate moment and having the moral courage to do that can be equally important to something that has great structure or great legacy.
Absolutely. And I we had a chat with this incredible guy called Dwayne Jackson, and he was a former drug trafficker, and he grew up in children's homes his whole life in the East End of London. When he was 15, he got kicked out of school, and then when he was 20, he was arrested for trying to smuggle drugs from England to the United States. And 10 years since his arrest, he's founded his own tech company and grown it and sold it successfully. But in speaking to him, the lessons that we got from him were less business lessons and more kind of life lessons. Certain things that he said really, really impacted me personally. He talked about how growing up in care allowed him to navigate uncertainty and how he doesn't seek for completeness or fact or reason, and that he prefers to live the questions rather than seeking answers all the time. And that really taught me a lot about not always wanting to know what's going to happen and therefore be more in the present moment. So there were definitely lessons in terms of how to live a good life from a lot of the people that we met.
I was struck by how, I mean, you talked with various people who've had prison records. I mean, who've spent time in prison and sort of had to learn how to cope with that and what to do with that. And some of them really turned their lives around.
We were so incredibly impressed by that. Some of the lessons that came through from their experiences in prison, for example, is how to pay attention to the world around you. The guy who I was just talking about, Dwayne Jackson, he said that 90% of the time that you're in prison is boring, and you have so much time to observe your environment, so you become extremely perceptive. And that, together with the fact that you have to make do with very limited resources around you, means that everything that you look at takes on additional meaning and every detail matters. And that's really helped them both in their personal lives, but also from an entrepreneurial or business perspective.
And there's another guy you write about, Antonio Fernandez, who you say is an example of what you call the pivot. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah. Antonio, or King Tone, as he was known, was the leader of the Latin Kings. He's just incredible. I mean, I think part of the people that are in the book are folks that we just really liked. And these aren't just folks that are born into criminal cultures or those types of worlds, but they're actively going, even trying to transform those. And so at the time that King Tone inherited the leadership of the Latin Kings, which is a Hispanic street gang, it was recovering from one of its bloodiest periods.
And then they had a reputation of being a really violent street gang.
Horribly. Yeah. And that was Mission Drift. You know, the organization started off in Chicago very much as a cultural organization, as a celebration of Latino identity. The more and more that those communities were pushed into poverty, the more that the gang became a real criminal player. And so part of what Tone was trying to do was to think about, well, how do we pivot from one of the deadliest street gangs into a social movement like the Black Panthers? And so this was just in crass terms, it was a change management program. But it was just extraordinarily visionary and courageous for him to think about how to hack the culture of that organization. And it wasn't easy. And some accused him of just doing a vicious marketing campaign. The FBI was on record saying that. And he eventually did go to prison. And in prison, he was in solitary confinement for the first 3 years so that he couldn't communicate to the gang. And I remember him telling me every morning for 3 hours, he would just remind himself who he was and what his mission, you know, in the world was. I think there's so many people in our prison populations who have incredible hustle, incredible entrepreneurial skills, incredible vision, but they're just on the wrong side of the law. And so how do we create opportunities for prisoners to become entrepreneurs or to tap into opportunities in formal markets?
Alexa Clay and Kira Maya Phillips are the authors of The Misfit Economy, Lessons in Creativity from Pirates, Hackers, Gangsters, and Other Informal Entrepreneurs. They talked with Steve Paulson.